Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. Another distribution has joined LinuxQuestions.org. I'm happy to announce that the latest addition is Puppy Linux. I'd like to thank Mark for working with me on getting this distribution set up. You can visit LinuxQuestions.org, and the first story right on the homepage will give you a link directly to the new Puppy Linux forum. And there's quite a bit of participants from the Puppy Linux team, which is great. Next, the LQ Wiki now has just shy of 2,750 articles, and participation over about the last 2 to 3 months has just skyrocketed, but we still need your help to reach our goal of 3,000 articles. Now, anyone can participate in the LQ Wiki, and you can really help regardless of your technical expertise level. That's one great thing about the wiki paradigm, is it allows you really to contribute in whatever kind of expertise you have, whether it be as simple as correcting spelling mistakes that you see, to correcting the grammar that you see, punctuation, all the way up to, you know, adding new very technical articles. So it really runs the gamut. Regardless of what you think you're good at, you can definitely contribute and help the LQ Wiki. For those of you interested in participating, the URL is simply wiki.linuxquestions.org. And a reminder that all content is licensed under either the Creative Commons by SA or the GFDL. Next, we're always looking for members who are interested in writing tutorials, doing distribution reviews, entering information into the HCL, or helping out LQ in any other way. We've also recently released the LQ article section that contains all original content, and it includes things like editorials, opinion pieces, technical news, and more. So if you are interested in becoming a contributor for any of these sections, please do contact us. A final reminder that to celebrate the launch of TrioQuestions.org, all software in the TrioQuestions store is a full 20% off until July 1st. To take advantage of this offer, just go to software.trioquestions.org and use the following coupon code, TQ20. Now on to the news. The first story I have is Novell names Ron Hovsepian to succeed Jack Messman as CEO. And this is really continuing in the recent rash of high-level departures. And of course, that would include Bill Gates and quite a variety of execs from Microsoft, but would also include things like Scott McNeely departing from Sun. Jack Messman has been ousted by the Novell board, along with the current Novell CFO. Taking his place is a longtime IBMer, Ram Hovsepian. The market reacted quite well to this news, with Novell stock up over 10% at the time that I did this podcast, although it should be noted that it's still down very sharply for the year. I think it's clear that Messman just wasn't the right guy to turn Novell around. He didn't seem to understand their Linux and OSS strategy very well, and the company was subject to a fair amount of internal strife and overall lack of vision and direction while he was there. You'll remember many months ago on the note of internal strife, I reported of the high-profile departures from Novell, including the founder of SUSE, which I considered a substantial loss for the company. The prospects seem to be better for the new CEO from what I've read, which should be encouraging for Novell. He had the following to say in the press release. Quote, going forward, we will maintain a sharp focus on meeting customer demand and delivering value through Linux-based enterprise-wide solutions and identity and resource management products. We have innovative technology, a strong roster of customers and business partners, and an extremely talented group of employees. I look forward to continuing to work closely with our business partners and customers. End quote. Now, it's true, they do have some very nice products, but they've failed to gain any real traction compared to, say, Red Hat in the market. They seem to want to focus more on the Linux desktop, while Red Hat has all but abandoned that in favor of the enterprise server market. And I think Novell's desktop slant is pretty much a direct result of them acquiring Zimian, which of course was a desktop-focused company, at around the same time they acquired SUSE. Which strategy will work out better in the long term is unclear at this point, but there is of course a good chance that they could both work out, with the two companies kind of carving out a little bit different niche, but both succeeding, and more than succeeding, doing very, very well. One thing is clear though, and that's the Linux market. And here I'm especially talking about companies like IBM, which are huge consumers of Linux and also resellers of Linux as part of their consulting services. They're extremely eager to have two solid performers to avoid the pitfalls that became clear with the Microsoft monopoly. Companies like IBM ended up being very beholden to Microsoft, and they've learned their lesson, and that's why you see a lot of these companies even going as far as to fund both Novell and Red Hat. Almost all the big ones sell both Red Hat and Novell, and it's really a way for them to diversify and kind of hedge their bets. They know that Linux is the way they want to go, but instead of having a chance that they'd be beholden to a single company, they make sure there's two. And you might say, well, why don't they just make sure there's a whole bunch of them? They don't want to have to support, say, 10 distributions. The logistics there is just too much. So it seems like the market wants two, arguably three, but three would be the absolute tops. I don't think you'll see ISVs support more than, say, three distribution types in their releases. It would just be too much work. The question here becomes, how much time remains for Novell before someone else steps up as the clear number two? And that, we'll have to see how quickly the new CEO reacts and how quick the market is on the uptake there. The next story I have is why Oracle isn't a member of the OSDL. This was from a recent interview in Internet News with Wim, who is the Director of Linux Engineering at Oracle. Wim goes into some details on how Oracle is utilizing Linux currently. It's fantastic to see that, quote, almost half of Oracle Application Server 10G Release 3 shipments were on Linux in the first 3 months of 2006, end quote. I knew that Oracle's penetration on Linux was really gaining some traction here, but I didn't realize that it was almost half, which really is awesome. Of course, traditionally, Sun has been huge when you're talking about enterprise Oracle installations, so I'm guessing they're the most hurt by this. I'm not sure what the Windows penetration was previously, or if they're suffering, but clearly Linux is the most growing. When the topic of the OSDL came up now, Wim had this to say. Quote, let's just say that one part of the OSDL is trying to represent businesses to the Linux community. I know that a number of the members aren't heavily involved in Linux, but still are members. We basically know where to go. We have a good relationship directly with people in the Linux community. We have all our partners, so there is no immediate advantage to be a member for us. Not to sound arrogant, but we know how to deal with the Linux community. The thing that was really kind of revolting is that OSDL goes out and basically says they represent the Linux community while there is no direct feedback line to the community. End quote. Now looking at the roster of the OSDL, it's true that a number of the members aren't heavily directly involved in Linux. Beyond that, though, you have to remember that for Oracle, open source is not a core thing. They've long been a very proprietary company, and now are just coming around to open source. But like I said, not in a core way. You're not going to see them open sourcing Oracle 10G or even a component, say, like RAC, anytime soon. One of the main points of OSDL is to share R&D costs between open source companies who are going to share and then gain services money, and Oracle certainly doesn't want to do that. Now, I'd have thought, why isn't MySQL AB not an OSDL would come up before why isn't Oracle, but that question I haven't even seen broached anywhere. His last comment, however, is the one that I felt was poignant here. The OSDL really seems to be taking a beating in this point lately. I've not seen a ton actually change, though, which is kind of strange. Now, Greg KH seems hopeful now that some of the things that they were proposed a while back will be adopted, and I think that's really encouraging. I think he's pretty indicative of the kernel community in general, at least the hardcore kernel community. And he had recently had a meeting, along with some others, with OSDL. So the fact that he's optimistic would lead me to be optimistic also. Now, a while back, and this was actually based on one of Greg's blog posts, I had offered, and this was both on a personal level and on behalf of LQ, to help the OSDL with their community efforts. It was my hope that, as the founder of LinuxQuestions.org, at least ostensibly I have some kind of knowledge of the Linux community and how it works, and I was definitely willing to lend my hand in any way I could. While some people from within the OSDL did in fact contact me after that, and some very useful discussion did take place, nothing really ever came out of it in the end. Now, the offer, of course, still stands, and I think one of the problems with the offer from my side is that I still don't have a clear picture of exactly what LQ or myself could do, but I do think there's something. So if I can mentally suss it out, kind of, I will be contacting them, but if anyone from the OSDL has any ideas, I'm more than willing to listen. The next story I have is Mundy Speaks on OSS. Craig Mundy who was recently made Chief Research and Strategy Officer at Microsoft when Bill Gates stepped down, was recently interviewed by eWeek. One of the things he commented on was the GPL. His response to the question about interoperability with open source, and specifically the GPL, was this. Quote, I've been one of the principal people architecting the way we are going to step up to this bigger question around interoperability, and that will certainly be a focus of mine going forward, along with Bob Muglia. End quote. So while it seems like interoperability is something that he's going to be for, let's not forget that in the not-too-distant past, he was the Microsoft anti-open-source poster child. In fact, the parent open letter, if you remember a while back, that was signed by everyone from Stallman to O'Reilly, just an impressive number of people that typically don't agree on things, was addressed directly to Mundy. So the question becomes there, has he done a mental 360? Did he really not believe what he was saying back then? Or is this just lip service? As I've mentioned in the past, in fact, in the very last week's podcast, words mean very little at this point, and we need to see some definitive and decisive action, and some significant action, I think, at that. Now, complying with the EU antitrust case would be a start, but you don't really get many points simply for following the stipulations of a lawsuit. With the history that Microsoft has, the olive branch they need to extend at this point has to really be more of an olive tree. Let's stop the words and get to the actions, because we're all waiting to see what happens. The last story I have is the Microsoft exec exodus. And this is a topic I've covered multiple times recently, specifically also last week. More execs are continuing to step down from Microsoft. Both Martin Taylor and Ted Hayes are already gone, in fact, from the two articles that covered this. Quote, Microsoft did not give details on why Martin Taylor left the world's biggest software maker after 13-year company veteran was appointed in March to lead marketing efforts for Windows Live. End quote. Next, quote, after 16 exciting, interesting years in one place, challenging conventional thinking, introducing fresh approaches, creating new business opportunities, and managing, leading, and being influenced by some of the brightest minds in the industry, I've decided that it's time for a change. End quote. And that was from Ted Hayes. As you can see, both have been with the company for well over a decade, which is a significant time period, especially in this industry. Both of them seem to have come to very recent, very hasty decisions, or it could be that they were pushed out and given the option to, you know, resign before they were fired. Currently, has some interesting ideas on what we'll see in the coming months, and if this is a topic that you're kind of interested in, I highly recommend you head over to Kringley's blog and check out the most recent article. I agree with most of what he says, and I came to the same conclusion a couple weeks ago that for them to do this right, Ballmer has to go. And that's really because many of the old Microsoft fundamentals are just steeped into who he is and how he acts, so if they really want to turn this around, he's really not going to be an effective guy to do that. Kringley, though, takes the assessment further than I did, and I focused mine specifically on Ballmer, and says that, quote, several dozen of his closest and oldest associates, end quote, must also leave for this to be done correctly. Now, when he says his there, he's referring to Gates and not Ballmer, but including Ballmer in that. Really, I think the crux of what he's getting at is the so-called Microsoft way must fundamentally shift in a major, major way, which in essence means a regime change at this point. Shift away from what, you ask? And I think this recent comment from Bill Gates is telling, and this was in a New York Times article. Quote, when they invented radial tires, they should have shot the guy. The whole industry went through a crisis because it took 9 years to squeeze out the extra factory capacity because the tires lasted longer. End quote. So right there, that's what Microsoft has thought of innovation for a long time now. Anything that cuts into sales, revenue, profits, even if it saves lives, is bad. I hope you're no longer wondering why Microsoft simply doesn't innovate. Whether they can pull this fundamental paradigm change off in a company of their size really remains to be seen, but a lot of longtime Microsoftees will have to go in the process for them to have any chance at all, so this one could get ugly. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.